Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
A new ocean-going record, a mountain conquered, and a dead girl at a glamorous party. It's September 1921.
100 years from today.
Your world news update, the messy aftermath of the Great War continues. The League of Nations Supreme Council has appointed an international commission of representatives from Belgium, Brazil, China and Spain to determine the disputed Silesian boundary between Germany and Poland. The League has five new members: Albania, Austria, Bulgaria, Finland and Luxembourg. Afghanistan has ratified a treaty of non-interference with the Soviet Union. Nobody wants the Afghans interfering with the Bolsheviks. We'll see how that holds up. In northern Persia, Russian troops have now withdrawn from the short-lived Soviet Republic of Gilan. Mirza Kuchak Khan and his German advisor have fled into the surrounding mountains. The cabinet of His Britannic Majesty's government has convened outside England for the first time, holding an emergency meeting at the townhouse of Inverness in Scotland to discuss the Irish situation. Prime Minister Lloyd George was on holiday in nearby Gairloch. The cabinet considered the outright rejection by Eamon de Valera, so-called president of the so-called Irish Republic, of limited self-government for Southern Ireland within the United Kingdom, and Mr. de Valera's rather more ambiguous response to an offer of Dominion status equivalent to Canada. The Republicans are also demanding freedom from legislation by Westminster, an end to the military presence in Ireland, and reunification with the new province of Northern Ireland. The government has invited Mr. de Valera and his colleagues to a meeting in Inverness on the sole condition that whatever form of government is agreed for Southern Ireland, it will remain within the empire. In the United States, troops have arrived in West Virginia to restore order to Mingo County and other parts of the state where thousands of coal miners are locked in battle with strike breakers. President Warren Harding has said that he will delay an actual proclamation of martial law in order to give the participants a last chance to end the violence themselves. So far, about 400 of 4,000 armed miners have surrendered to the soldiers. Most others in the so-called insurrection have fled into the West Virginia hills, secreting their weapons for future use. In Chester, Pennsylvania, a group of about 60 men, women and children had gathered on a footbridge on 3rd Street to watch the rescue of a drowning victim in Chester Creek below. The old wooden bridge collapsed and fell into the river. 34 people are now dead. Those larger-than-life photoplay actors work harder than many of us when it comes to making those exciting stories that grip us at the flickers. So they can perhaps be forgiven for partying harder than mere earthbound mortals on their days off. For Labor Day, the comedian Fatty Arbuckle, one of the highest-paid entertainers in America, had procured a large three-bedroom suite for a party at the St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco. The question that most excited the press was whether his glamorous leading lady, Mabel Normand, would attend the party. In the event, other women were seen arriving at the St. Francis, and there are now dark rumours circulating in San Francisco that something terrible has befallen one of them at the hotel. We will stay on top of this story for you.
I'm a wedding, necking and head, decking in colors, for that's why they call me necking and roll. Even a piano in the parlor. Father bought for 10 cents on the dollar. Second-hand coils, I bet in second-hand coils. I never get a single thing that's new. Even Jackie Cohen, he's the man I adore, had the nerve to tell me he's been married before. Everyone knows that I'm just second hand rose from Second Avenue.
With jobs hard to find, many American and Canadian workers are making do with second-hand hats, second-hand pearls, second-hand clothes. So the Labor Day parades across the continent are much diminished this year and included many second-hand displays on the floats, if there were any floats to be had. In New York City, for the first time in many years, there was no parade at all. John Sullivan, president of the Central Trades and Labor Council, said that the council and other bodies had decided to conserve their very limited funds in light of the industrial situation. In Toronto, the traditional parade from Queen's Park to the grounds of the Canadian National Exhibition went ahead, but groups of Bolsheviks among those out of work attempted to hijack the event, and the banners of those marching were notably pointed. Sample quote, 1914, Hunt the Hun, 1921, Hunt the Job. In Buffalo, however, there was a slightly larger turnout than previous years, with the women of the Waitresses Union decked out in special costumes. There was just the one float from the Barbers Union, with a customer atop it in the chair getting his shave and a haircut, but without having to pay the two bits. In Chicago, 3 days of Labor Day observances at White Sox Park concluded with an address by the former Democrat presidential candidate William Jennings Bryan. Mr. Bryan urged American organized labor to follow the example of their German brethren, who had become vitally important supporters of the fledgling German Republic. This new labor-friendly republic, said Mr. Bryan, was one of the most significant developments in recent world history. With all due respect to William Jennings Bryan and his sparkling oratory, many attendees at White Sox Park were there principally to see the films of the so-called fight of the century between the Manassas mauler Jack Dempsey and the Orchid Man Jacques Carpentier. But Fire Chief Fitzmaurice refused to allow the films to be shown. Others were there for the paddle wheel games, for which Mayor Thompson declined to issue a permit. Both the mayor and the chief were vigorously denounced by labor leaders.
Alas, what a keen anger was for them, when without a smile or a tear, we parted, you left me heartbroken, and oh, how I miss you. Alone for the one hope I leave, that you will return and forgive. I wonder if you still care for me. All day, dear, I pray, dear, that happy you may be. I'm longing to bless you, to keep your love and bless you. I wonder, I wonder if you still care for me.
I wonder if you still care for me. Well, one clue is if he celebrates Labor Day by shooting you from a passing automobile. In Illinois, 2 ladies threatened by prospective suitors have been shot and badly wounded outside their small bungalow in Prairie Road, Evanston, by guns fired from a black high-powered automobile that sped past. Three men the young ladies had asked to protect them are also wounded. The women, two former Chicago school teachers, did return fire. The reports of a Labor Day race riot in Gretna, a suburb of New Orleans, following clashes between whites and blacks at a Negro ball game. One Negro is reported dead, and the sheriff of Jefferson Parish has dispatched deputies to Gretna with instructions to shoot to kill. In Ormsby, Minnesota, a family of seven is dead. The mother and five children, apparently the victims of a Labor Day mass murder by the father, Mr. Frank Klokov. Mr. Klokov recently resigned for reasons no one knows as cashier of the Farmers State Bank in Ormsby. In sports news, America's tennis players have been hard at work this Labor Day in the 16th International Lawn Tennis Challenge. The United States defeated Japan 5-0 in the challenge round, with Bill Tilden triumphing in the final match over Zenzu Shimizu 6-1.
By the sea,
by the sea,
by the beautiful sea,
you and I,
you and I,
oh how happy we'll be.
When each wave comes a rolling in,
we will duck or swim,
and we'll float in full around the water,
over and under. R is rich.
My is rich.
So now what do we care?
I love to be beside your side.
Beside the sea.
Beside the seaside. By the beautiful sea.
The eye-catching bathing beauties that add so much to America's beaches are not yet unionized, but one at least is demanding her rights. At Atlantic City, Miss Louise Rosine was arrested for showing her kneecaps on the beach. She responded by slugging the cop with an impressive right uppercut and is now pending her court appearance in the city lockup, where she is showing rather more than her kneecaps. Sometimes Miss Rosine wears her bathing suit with its legs rolled up very far. Sometimes she discards it, and the blushing warden, Gus Baker, hastily proffers a blanket. And sometimes when the holding cell heats up, she discards the blanket and wears only a fiercely determined expression. Miss Rosine is from California and is demanding that New Jersey adopt the same laws on beachwear as her home state. She claims to have forgotten the name of her hotel in Atlantic City and so cannot send for clothes. Canadian and American officials are hard at work this Labor Day, putting the final touches to the so-called Peace Arch at the westernmost point of the Canada-US border between the communities of Surrey, British Columbia, and Blaine, Washington. The Peace Arch commemorates 100 years of peace between Canada and the United States since the Treaty of Ghent came into effect in 1815 and brought a formal end to the War of 1812. The commemoration was the idea of Samuel Hill, president of the Pacific Highway Association, but was postponed by the recent World War. One advantage of that delay was that the Peace Arch, designed free of charge by H.W. Corbett of London, England, is now one of the first earthquake-resistant structures to be built in North America. The Pacific Highway is already heavy with automobiles heading for the neutral zone 600 yards either side of the border. A Canadian girl, Miss Margaret Tremor of New Westminster, will present a Union Jack to the U.S. delegation, while an American young lady, Miss Gretchen Snow of Blaine, will present a Stars and Stripes to the Canadian delegation. These will be unfurled simultaneously on either side of the arch. The inscription in the stone on the Canadian side reads, "Brethren dwelling together in unity." On the American side are the words, "Children of a common mother." The murky events at the St. Francis Hotel in San Francisco where the famed comedian Fatty Arbuckle was hosting a party, are now a murder investigation. The actress Virginia Rapp, 26, is now dead of a ruptured bladder suffered at the party. Mr. Arbuckle has been arrested, and theatres in California and elsewhere have said they will not show his new comedy picture, Crazy to Marry.
Of a haunting refrain, she'll start upon a marathon and run around your brain. You can't escape. She's in your memory by morning, night, and noon. She will leave you and then come back again. Pretty girl is just like a pretty tune.
In a brand new beauty pageant in Atlantic City, 16-year-old Margaret Gorman has won the title the most beautiful bathing girl in America. There is some talk of making this an annual competition. U.S. Marine Sergeant Theodore Crawley has set a new world record for marksmanship, shooting 177 consecutive bullseyes with a U.S. Army standard rifle from a distance of 800 yards in a competition at Camp Perry in Ohio. The previous world record was a mere 106 consecutive bullseyes. The Cunard Line's ship RMS Aquitania has set a new speed record for crossing the Atlantic, averaging 22.45 knots and making the run from Cherbourg to New York in 5 days, 16 hours and 57 minutes. Not such a warm welcome to New York for the Greek ocean liner, the King Alexander. After a tip that it was smuggling drugs and liquor, 18 agents of the U.S. Narcotics Squad boarded the ship and opened fire, wounding 5 crew members. They blackjacked 20 more and took 327 prisoners. The agents reportedly seized more than $1 million worth of illegal cargo, but were unable to catch the leader of the narcotics ring, who is said to have escaped with thousands of dollars in cash, plus quantities of opium, heroin, cocaine, and hash. Sheesh. New York Harbor Police mistook the federal agents for rum runners and fired on them from the river. And just 1 hour after the raid, the head of the narcotics squad, Frank J. Fitzpatrick, committed suicide by shooting himself in the heart. The first super dreadnought of the U.S. Navy, the USS Washington, has been launched at Camden, New Jersey. The Washington has an all-electric driven engine and 8 16-inch guns and is said to be capable of a speed of 21 knots, just shy of that Cunard liner.
Here's a Japanese sandman sneaking on with a view. Just an old second-hand man. Buy your old days from you. He will take every sorrow of the day that is through, and he'll bring you tomorrow just to start life anew.
Never mind the Japanese sandman, all hail the Japanese snowman. In the Swiss Alps, where the Eiger stands 13,000 feet high, the first successful ascent of its brutally steep north face has been made by a team of 4 climbers, 3 guides from Switzerland, plus Maki Yuko of Japan, who began his mountaineering life by climbing Mount Fuji at the age of 10. The poet Austin Dobson introduced into English poetry various French forms, such as the triolet, the ballade, and the rondo. He is dead at 81. Anthony Lucas was born in Croatia but came to America and in 1901 struck the spindle-top gusher that gushed not far off a million barrels of oil 150 feet into the air for 9 days before it was brought under control. Mr. Lucas's strike started the Texas oil boom and transformed the economy of the Lone Star State. He is dead at 65. Sir Peter Fryer devoted his life to a different kind of gusher. He was a pioneering genitourinary surgeon. Born in Galway, he made his name in the Bengal Medical Service and operated on the Nawab of Rampur, crushing his bladder stone with a lithotrite. The grateful Nawab gave Dr. Fryer 10,000 rupees, which remuneration proved controversial at the time. Later, in London, he became a champion of the suprapubic prostatectomy, leading Lord Moynihan to hail him as the pea freer. Sir Peter is dead at 70. Your world news update. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues. The Soviet Union is going to war over the territory of Bessarabia. If you can't keep up with all these disputed territories, it's to the northwest of the Black Sea between the Dniester River in the east and the Prut River in the west. Previously, Bessarabia was part of the Russian Empire and following the Bolshevik Revolution, briefly the Moldavian Democratic Republic. With the support of the Allied Supreme Council, it is currently part of the Kingdom of Romania. The Bolsheviks have declared war on Romania in order to get Bessarabia back. The Principality of Albania has asked the League of Nations Assembly to intervene to stop the violation of its borders by the Kingdom of Serbs, Croats and Slovenes. Following his successful military campaign against the Spanish army and the Moroccan Sultan, the Berber rebel leader Abd el Krim has proclaimed the Republic of the Reef, with Ajdir as its capital city. After 3 weeks, the Battle of Sakarya has ended with a Greek surrender to the Turks. The dead from the battle number about 4,000 on each side. The Empire of Japan has published the diplomatic note it sent to Peking, demanding restoration of Japanese control of the Shandong Peninsula. Baron Roman von Ungern Sternberg was born in Austria to a German Baltic family, but believed himself to be a descendant of Genghis Khan and dreamed all his life of restoring the Mongol Empire. Those dreams have ended. Last month, he was captured by the Soviet army, and now, after the usual Bolshevik show trial, he has been executed by firing squad in Novonikolaevsk. Baron Ungern, known to Mongols as the Mad Baron or the Bloody Baron, was 35. The nominal monarch of Mongolia, the Bogd Khan, has ordered memorial services throughout the nation's Buddhist temples. The League of Nations has confirmed the appointment of 11 judges to the first so-called World Court, the Permanent Court of International Justice. Each justice from 11 different nations will serve a 9-year term. In Munich, the so-called Führer of the National Socialist German Workers' Party, Herr Adolf Hitler, has made a name for himself as a charismatic speaker, but there were no clever speeches when he decided to disrupt a meeting of Der Bayernbund, the Bavarian League, and wound up getting into a fight with secessionist leader Otto Ballerstedt. Herr Hitler now faces a jail term for assault.
It's a long way to Tipperary. It's a long way to go. It's a long way to Tipperary, to the sweetest girl I know. Goodbye, Tipperary, but my heart's right there.
Tipperary, sure, but it's goodbye Piccadilly, farewell Leicester Square, as far as Irish Republicans are concerned. Their revolutionary parliament, the Dáil Éireann, had agreed to send to a special meeting in Inverness with His Majesty's government, five delegates, including the so-called Irish Republic's so-called Foreign Minister, Arthur Griffith, and Finance Minister, Michael Collins. But it refused to drop its demand for complete independence outside the British Empire, and so Prime Minister Lloyd George has cancelled the conference. In the United States, Brigadier General Billy Mitchell has recommended that the Department of War and the Department of the Navy be consolidated into a single Department of National Defense, comprising the Army, Navy, and a proposed U.S. Air Service. Sir Ernest Shackleton is not just a great explorer, but a great enthusiast of new sound and visual technology. Many will recall the famous account he made for Edison Phonographic of his South Polar Expedition.
Main result of the British Antarctic Expedition of 1907 under my command are as follows. We reached a point within 97 geographical miles of the South Pole. The only thing that stopped us from reaching the actual point was the lack of 50 pounds of food.
That was after the event, of course. Now Sir Ernest is said to have used Harry Grindle Matthews' new sound-on-film process to make a farewell message in sound and vision just one day before sailing from St. Catherine Docks for Antarctica. The British Mandate of Palestine has signed an agreement to provide for electric power infrastructure through most of the mandatory territory. The government has granted Pincus Rutenberg's Jaffa Electric Company the exclusive right to a 70-year concession to generate hydroelectric power from the Yarkon River. More high-voltage news. In a demonstration at Pittsfield, Massachusetts, the General Electric Company has, for the first time, transmitted 1 million volts of electricity. The first radio station in New England has begun broadcasting. Financed by Westinghouse Electric Company, WBZ will operate from Springfield, Massachusetts, and transmit on the 300 meters wavelength. In other radio news, KDKA, the Pittsburgh station, has partnered with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette to create what it calls the first news department in the history of wireless broadcasting. In sports news, the New Zealand All Blacks and the South African Springboks have tied the final test of their very first rugby union series, played in appalling conditions in Wellington, New Zealand. The All Blacks won the first test in Dunedin. The Springboks took the second in Auckland. So the series has ended in a 1-1 draw, but the excitement generated suggests we have witnessed the birth of one of the world's great sporting rivalries. In Norway, the Dovre Line rail link between Oslo and Trondheim has opened and suffered its first fatal accident. The inaugural train was returning from the celebrations in Trondheim when it collided with another train on the Storen line. It is the first major rail accident in Norwegian history, and six prominent persons are dead, including a director of the railway company, the director of the National Map Agency, and a former Minister of Defence. The king, who had opened the railway but decided to stay in Trondheim a few days and so was not on the return trip, has visited the scene of the tragedy. 75 coal miners are dead after a series of underground explosions in a mine at Mount Mulligan, Queensland. Admiral of the Fleet, the Marquess of Milford Haven, is still perhaps better known as His Serene Highness Prince Louis of Battenberg, his name and style until 1917, when the King ordered all members of the royal family to relinquish their German titles. Anti-German sentiment is said to have forced his premature retirement during the late war as Britain's first Sea Lord. The collapse of the Mark rendered his German properties worthless, and the Bolsheviks cost him his extensive expensive investments in Russia, as well as the lives of two of his sisters-in-law, members of the Tsarist family whom the blood-soaked Reds murdered. Earlier this year, Lord Milford Haven was in Jerusalem for the burial of one of those ladies, Grand Duchess Elizabeth. The former First Sea Lord is dead of heart failure following influenza at the age of 67.
சிந்து நதியின் மீசை நிலவினிலே சேரணாட்டிளம் பெண்களுடனே.
Subramania Bharati spoke and wrote over a dozen languages, but Tamil he prized above all. His songs and poems in that language are beloved throughout India by the people, if not so much by the government, for whom his fiery nationalism could cause problems. Earlier this year, Mr. Bharati was feeding a coconut to an elephant he had befriended called Lavanya. The elephant got agitated and attacked him, and although he survived, the poet's health never really recovered. Subramania Bharati is dead at 38. Your World News Update: a silo containing 4,500 tons of ammonium-based fertilizer has blown up at the Badische Anilin und Soderfabrik plant, BASF, in Oppau on the River Rhine in Germany. The two explosions, half a second apart, were heard well over 200 miles away in Munich and in eastern France. Where the silo tower once stood, there is now a crater of some 400 square foot, 60 feet deep. The explosions have destroyed over 80% of the buildings in town and left some 7,000 people homeless. The pressure wave did similar damage across the river in Mannheim, destroyed all the medieval windows of Worms Cathedral, 10 miles to the north, ripped off roofs 15 miles away, and caused trams to derail in Heidelberg, 20 miles to the south. So far, over 500 bodies have been dragged from the rubble, and another 2,000 people are injured. The economic damage is estimated at a billion marks. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues in Budapest. Count Gyula Andrássy, the former Austro-Hungarian foreign minister, narrowly escaped assassination when the anti-monarchist Ibrahim Kova fired 5 shots at him to protest Count Andrássy's support for the restoration of King Károly to his Hungarian throne. In Lviv, President Józef Piłsudski of Poland also narrowly escaped assassination when the Ukrainian nationalist Stepan Fedak fired at an open motor car carrying the president and the governor of Lviv. Governor Grabowski was struck twice, but President Piłsudski ducked, and the third shot struck the windshield. The Council of the League of Nations has presented its recommendations for settling the dispute between Poland and Lithuania over the city of Vilnius, seized by Poland's General Zeligowski. The Council of Ambassadors of the League of Nations has demanded that Hungary evacuate the Burgenland section of Austria, which Hungarian partisans claim as Orvidek. Roland Boyden, the American arbitrator of the Allied Commission on Reparations, has ruled that Germany's obligations under the Treaty of Versailles require that reparations payments be made under the exchange rates for the German mark and the Belgian and French francs that prevailed on the day of the armistice, 11th November 1918. The German mark has collapsed since then, and the decision effectively requires Germany to pay an additional 1 billion marks worth of gold to France. However, Poland and Germany have signed a treaty allowing Germany to retain the independent port of Danzig. In Geneva, the first League of Nations treaty to prohibit human trafficking, the International Convention for the Suppression of the Traffic in Women and Children, has been signed.
Caravan, Hindustan. only threat is bad. Hindustan, where the purple thunder flashes across the sand. Hindustan, where I met her and the world began.
India's Central Legislative Assembly has voted to ask the King Emperor's government to repeal the Rowlatt Act, which permits the authorities to arrest and imprison suspects indefinitely without trial. Also in India, the Muslim rebel leader Sitikoya Tangal has proclaimed himself the governor of a new kingdom based in Kumaramputur. In Madurai, Mahatma Gandhi, the most influential member of the Indian nationalist movement, has decided to abandon the style of dress he has worn as a British barrister called to the bar at the Inner Temple in London and instead dress only in the traditional robe and loincloth favoured by the poorest of Indians. No loincloths for Irish nationalists, not yet. The stumbling block for government talks with Republican revolutionaries on John Bull's other island has been London's insistence that whatever polity is negotiated remain within His Majesty's dominions. Prime Minister Lloyd George has sent a fresh invitation to the so-called Irish Republic so-called President Éamon de Valera, inviting him to discuss Ireland's place as a nation within the British Empire. This time, Mr. De Valera has accepted and will meet the Prime Minister in Downing Street on October the 11th.
Down Imagination Lane, let us wander once again. Please follow me to the end, till we reach the land of Just Pretend. Then happy we will be. Sweet lady, make believe I've won your hand. Sweet lady, make believe a wedding grand. Oh my, see the parson at the altar. He'll tie a knot as strong as Gibraltar. Sweet lady, make believe we'll build a home. With maybe some additions of our own. If you make it true, I'll not be grieving. Sweet lady, must we keep on make-believing? Sweet lady.
Will the sweet lady seem as sweet when they're politicians? The first woman elected to the British House of Commons was the Irish revolutionary Countess Markovitz, who, being imprisoned in Holloway at the time, declined to take her seat. The second woman was the American-born Viscountess Astor, who did take her seat. Now a third woman has been elected to the Commons, Margaret Wintringham, who won a by-election for her late husband's constituency in Lincolnshire. She will be the first British-born woman to be seated in the House. If the thought of lady politicians makes you blush, have a drink. For the first time since the provisions of the Defence of the Realm Act took effect in 1915, residents of Great Britain and Ireland will be able to booze it up until late in the evening. Alcohol will now be permitted to be served until midnight, and you'll have until 12:30 to finish those last orders. The first international eugenics conference to be held since 1912 has closed in London with an address by Leonard Darwin, former Liberal Unionist Member of Parliament and advocate of Indian currency reform. Aside from being chairman of the British Eugenics Society, Leonard Darwin is also the son of Charles Darwin. He told his fellow eugenicists that it was the patriotic duty of, quote, better class families to propagate because those persons with superior genetic traits were disappearing while, quote, inferior persons were rapidly multiplying. In the United States, the Committee on Unemployment Statistics has reported record high unemployment throughout the country. We are approaching the 50th anniversary of the Great Chicago Fire of 1871. We all know the story of how that fire started when Catherine O'Leary was milking her cow and the cow kicked her and she dropped her lantern in the straw, setting alight the barn at 137 DeCoven Street. Well, the Chicago Fire Department has been examining all its records and claims that Mrs. O'Leary's incendiary bovine is blameless. The good lady was in bed at 8:30 that night, an hour before the fire department was alerted that a fire had broken out. U.S. Army Air Service Lieutenant John McCready has set a new world altitude record, flying at 40,800 feet in the same Packard LePere fighter plane that set the previous world altitude record just last year. There will be no such feats anymore from Second Lieutenant Ernest Maunoury, the French flying ace. With 11 aerial victories in the late World War, he died near Kazau when a wing fell off the aeroplane he was piloting. Lieutenant Maunoury was 26. There will be no more daring feats from Bernard de Romanet, another French lieutenant and flying ace with 18 aerial victories, who twice broke the world speed record just last year. He was in the qualifying races for the Coupe Deutsche de la Meurthe and, according to witnesses on the ground, appeared to have surpassed 200 kilometres per hour and then 300 kilometres per hour in his Lumière de Monge racer, but the fabric on the left wing had been torn off and he crashed near Etampes. He is dead at the age of 27. Bulgaria has joined the ranks of broadcasting nations. The wireless telegraph station at Sofia has transmitted a recording of a concert received from a German station at Nauen. The first radio station in Mexico is on the air, transmitting from the Chapultepec section of Mexico City at 20 watts of power.
A song that in heaven to sing when the angels would play. So God told the angels where one could be found. They came and they took him one day. He's gone to that sweet land of sunshine forever and ever to stay. They needed a songbird in heaven, so God took Caruso away.
These have been a terrible few weeks for music in our world. They needed a songbird in heaven, so God took Caruso away. The composers Wagner and Smetana needed their great patron in heaven, so God took the Princess Pauline von Metternich away. She married her uncle Richard, so the famous diplomatist Clemens, Prince von Metternich, her beloved grandfather, became additionally her father-in-law. She helped the French Empress Eugenie escape from Paris to England, and she had a long-standing feud with the Austrian Empress Elizabeth. There was a persistent rumour that after a dispute over the floral arrangements at the Vienna Musical Exposition, she and Countess Anastasia von Kielmansegg fought a bare-breasted duel. It is not known whose bosom came out on top, and Princess Pauline always denied the story and regretted that it detracted from her patronage of new composers. She is dead at 85. The opera Hansel and Gretel is undoubtedly the best-known work of the German composer Engelbert Humperdinck. Herr Humperdinck applied to be director of the Sydney Conservatorium of Music, but it was 1914. and the composer was an enthusiastic supporter of the Kaiser and his army, and so it would have been unthinkable in Australia. He had a heart attack at a performance of Der Freischütz by Karl Maria von Weber and died the following day. Engelbert Humperdinck was 67. Ernest Cassel was a Prussian Jew who became a very wealthy merchant banker in London, a close friend of King Edward VII, a member of the Privy Council, and a Knight Grand Cross of the Order of the Bath. Sir Ernest is dead at 69. Dr. José Celso Barbosa is known as the father of the statehood movement in Puerto Rico. He was also one of the first men of African descent to earn a medical degree in the United States. He returned to Puerto Rico and persuaded local businessmen to embrace a scheme he developed whereby employers contribute to the health care costs of their workers. Dr. Barbosa is dead at 64. George Footit was an English circus clown who became famous all over France as one half of an hilarious double act with a Cuban Negro, Rafael Padilla. Footit et Chocolat were stars at the Folies Bergères and across Paris for two decades. And a phrase from the act, Je suis chocolat, meaning I am deceived, passed into the French vernacular. Mr. Footit is dead at 57. And that's the way of the world, September 1921.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and O'Kill Media. All rights reserved.